A frequent thread running through many discussions, both on this program and in society, concerns the loss of trust in institutions. Two generations ago, about three-quarters of the American public had faith that the federal government would do the right thing for the people. That figure is below 20% now. Faith in other institutions, including the news media, has also fallen. Trust in law enforcement has also taken a hit, especially in the last few years, with events like the Michael Brown shooting in Ferguson, Missouri, and events in other cities. Those cities include Eugene, which will host a discussion of police accountability and force tomorrow night at 7 at the eWeb Board Meeting Room. We get something like a preview of the topic today with your input. Several guests join us all by phone. Eric Richardson is the Lane County NAACP president. He'll be moderating tomorrow night's discussion. Eric, welcome.
Thank you.
Okay, yeah, I have you. Arias Johnson Jr. is with us as well. He is with the Oregon Department of Justice as the Civil Rights Director. Welcome.
Good morning.
Good morning. Daryl Turner's with us. He is the Portland Police Association president. Hi, Daryl.
Good morning.
And Marianne Dugan is a civil rights attorney in practice. Welcome, to Marianne.
Thank you.
Okay, we have them all here. Lou Frederick is on the line with us on his way to Portland, where he's, or on his way somewhere anyway. He is the state representative from District 43. He'll be present tomorrow night as well. Representative Frederick, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for inviting me. Yes, I am on speakerphone, so sorry about that.
Okay, we'll try to come to you just in a chunk later on. Eric Richardson, I want to start with you because this is an issue near and dear to you because your sister and nephew were handled roughly by police in Eugene. And before we get too far down the road, I just want to get out of the way what the status of that situation is.
That case is being handled by Heard lawyer Ryan Michaels, and the case has been filed as far as I'm concerned, as far as I understand. I don't have much to tell you on that. I think it's going a little slower than we would like, but at the same time, there has been movement.
All right, so then in a more general sense, not the personal part, but the societal part, I mean, what would you say is the general mood in Lane County specifically about police and force these days?
Well, I think there's a big acknowledgement that there needs to be change. At the same time, in the last several months, there has been movement in that Chief Kearns has acknowledged and, in fact, begun to move on new regulations. I've had conversations with the union chair and with the chief, and I've introduced them to ideas and legislative ideas that are coming out of the Black Lives Movement, in fact. And so I think that the conversation is being had, and perhaps we are seeing some movement.
Arias Johnson Jr. at the Oregon Department of Justice, give us an idea of your department's involvement in interfaces between police and the public that involve the use of force, and what kinds of things that your department looks out for.
We actually don't even do anything in that realm yet. We have been sitting down, according to HB 2002, it was anti-profiling statute, and we put together a work group that's trying to put together some model policies and procedures to deal with the phenomenon, and one of the areas we've identified needs some training, some implicit bias training, cultural competency, cultural consciousness. Me personally, I believe if we can create more interpersonal connections, if we can get police to understand communities, communities to understand police, I think we can alleviate some of these pressures, some of these suspicions, and start seeing each other as human beings. But to answer your question, the DOJ doesn't have any specific involvement with the community when it comes to excessive uses of force by municipal police officers.
Okay, but you mentioned HB 2002, and did that pass the last legislature or a year ago maybe?
Yes, and we had to come up with recommendations, which we are getting ready for the 2017 session.
All right, and so there's further legislation that needs to be passed?
Yes, the first part was just to create a work group that would analyze the issue, talk about putting together model policies, collecting data, finding out what needs to be done in order to create these policies. And so we had individuals come together, Harrelson, the DA from Corvallis, for example, Sheriff Teague, Brooke Reinhold, and we came together and came up with recommendations for the legislature to consider. And the three groups we identified was, you know, law enforcement training, accountability and monitoring, and actually data collection. So now the second phase is actually coming up with legislative language.
What kind of data collection?
The LECC, which is the Law Enforcement Contact Committee, is going to be the central repository for police complaints. So they will actually be compiling these complaints and actually breaking down the data. Where is it occurring? What locations? Possibly using some of the criteria under the profiling statute as far as sexual orientation, race, gender, to try to give us a breakdown of if profiling is occurring, how is it occurring, where is it occurring, and then if the LECC sees some kind of anomaly in the data, then the second phase kicks in where they're sending that information to DOJ, where the Office of Civil Rights would analyze it to find out if, in fact, there's a problem. And that, in turn, would create an interactive process between DOJ and the law enforcement agency where this anomaly has been found, a conversation gets created, technical assistance is considered, and a way to fix the problem, for lack of a better cliche to tack onto it, is formulated between DOJ and the law enforcement agency.
All right, Daryl Turner, I want to bring you in here because you're representing police. The Portland Police Association is what you're the president of, which is the union for Portland Police. Something that Arias Johnson Jr. was talking about, trying to get police to understand the public and the public to understand the police. Give us an idea of how tricky things are in general and how much more so in the last couple of years.
Well, I think Arias is exactly on point. I mean, we have to... We have to work together to understand each other, to understand why police do what they do, but also those community concerns and why they're community concerns. Most of these instances, not all of them, but most of these instances can be explained if there's a little bit more conversation and collaboration as opposed to this is the law, this is why we do what we do. So I think that's very important in those situations. You know, in 1989, the Supreme Court ruled about Graham versus Connor, which basically says force used by police officers has to be reasonable. What is reasonable is reasonable to other police officers in that same situation, in that scenario, without 20/20 hindsight. I think a lot of people don't really understand Graham versus Connor, and I think they need to. And I think also that most police agencies, most larger police agencies, I know the Portland Police Bureau, actually... we call it Graham Plus. There's a little bit stricter policy, even more so than Graham, implemented here in the city of Portland for Portland police officers. And I think many larger metropolitan cities are the same. Ironically, the federal police officers that are mandated, their standards are a lot less stringent than most police agencies in most metropolitan cities are. But I think he's right on point. I think it has to be community and police involvement together. I think in our case, when the United States Justice Department comes in and critiques us and says that we use force more against people with mental illness, I don't agree with it. But I also think that we have to understand when the U.S. DOJ leaves town, it's the community and the police officers that have to work together to make sure we have that communication, that collaboration, to be able to understand each other, to be able to give each other information, and be able to educate each other. And I think that goes a long way into easing a lot of the burden, the trust, the accountability, and the transparency issues that law enforcement nationwide is having. I think it's a communication piece and a collaboration piece we need to all work on.
We're talking police and force here on the Jefferson Exchange. That's Daryl Turner from the Portland Police Association. We also have Marianne Dugan, a civil rights attorney, Lou Frederick, a state representative from Portland, Arias Johnson Jr. from the Oregon Department of Justice Civil Rights Division, and Eric Richardson from the NAACP in Lane County. You can join our discussion on the Exchange, 800-838-3760, by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Daryl, I want to come back to a point you made about Graham versus Connor, though. The standards of use of force has to be what another officer would use. Is that clearly delineated, or is it what's standard within the department, or a sort of a countrywide standard? How is that set?
Well, Graham versus Connor is the national standard, but many police agencies have even wrapped themselves around Graham versus Connor and gone a little bit deeper, and have gone deeper into it. It's not as simple as what is reasonable for other police officers to what kind of force to use, whether it be a minimal amount of force all the way up to deadly force. So there are other components of Graham versus Connor, such as the severity of the crime, whether the suspect poses an immediate threat to safety of the officers or others, whether he or she is acting aggressively, resisting to attempt to evade arrest by flight. So there are many things that are encompassed in Graham versus Connor that a lot of people don't see or don't know about, and that other police agencies nationwide are using those criteria also to encompass Graham versus Connor. So it's not as simple as just what is reasonable with other police officers. There are components of it that are more strict, and that we actually, like I said, the Portland Police Bureau is implemented into our use of force and deadly force policies that we have to abide by. And also there are state standards and that just apply to law enforcement, not to, like, civilians, not just a standard that applies to civilians, but other laws that apply to just law enforcement officers besides those others that apply to civilians. So there's a higher standard set, and I think once people are educated to it and understand it, it gives them a little bit more insight on use of force by police. But I also think those conversations, those one-on-ones, whether it's a police officer on the street to a citizen, or whether it's groups, community groups, to groups of police officers, I think those conversations are important. I think they bring us closer together, and I've had those conversations with several people. And when we walk away from each other both with a head nod, yeah, I understand where you're coming from and you understand where I'm coming from. And it makes it a lot easier to have that communication when force is used and there are questions to be asked and answered and accountability to be made.
I want to bring Lou Frederick in here from the Oregon State Legislature because we're going to lose you in about 5 minutes. We already heard from Arias Johnson Jr. about the passage of House Bill 2002. Tell us about legislation that has emerged already in response to confrontations between police and the community, and what is potentially coming in the 2017 session of the legislature.
Well, thank you. I was actually one of the chief sponsors of 2002 and actually part of a packet of other bills that are related to this particular issue. We are going to see, I'm planning on introducing legislation calling for a regular psychological evaluation of police while they're at work, not following an incident, but a regular time so that they are getting a chance to talk about some of the issues that come up as a police officer. I want to go back to something, though, that's really important. We're talking about a change, I hope, a change in culture, because although we may have a Supreme Court ruling, what has happened is, in many cases, the excessive use of force has been, the excuse has been, I felt my life was in danger, and as a result, I can use whatever force I want to use. That has created an issue of trust that we still have to work through. And I think that's going to be a key element, is reestablishing a concept of trust for police and for the community, and understanding how the police understand the community. This is one of the biggest issues, not just in Portland, but across the state and across the country. But we've certainly seen it in Portland and in some places where there are minority groups and other groups. If you got a chance, the task force that Arias mentioned went to Medford and also to Portland and had about a 2 or 3 hour session with people coming up to talk about their experiences where they saw profiles. And those examples were not just trivial examples. They had a profound impact not only on those people, but also on the what happened when they told those stories to their friends and relatives in their community. So I think we're going to see a number of issues. We're going to look at the excessive use of force question, and we're going to see other things that try to relate to culture and changing the police culture, changing the approach that you take in talking with the community, rather than being there to enforce the law, being there to protect and serve. So that's a different scenario. It's a different approach, and we still are going to have to try to relate to that, try to find some way to get legislation that supports that idea.
Is there something short of legislation that has been tried? I know, you know, as a member of the legislature, you want to legislate, but, I mean, have there been other efforts that have been considered short of actually trying to pass state laws?
Oh, I think there are a number of things. I think Daryl Turner has been involved with the Portland police have been involved, and the union have talked about trying to find other ways to approach this rather than a statewide legal situation. That's also been the case in Klamath Falls and Eugene and Umatilla. The attempt is to try to reestablish a community tie with the police force, the police department, so that you actually are not having to go to legislation, but reestablish the idea that you are not there to try to act as a military group and occupying army kind of thing, but you're there to actually work with your neighbors and friends and citizens around you. That's a different attitude, and so they're working at that. I think Daryl Turner and the department, Portland Police Department, as well as a lot of the community, are trying to reestablish that concept.
So what are some of the likely bits of legislation? I mean, are there things that you're ready to introduce on day one of the 2017 session of the legislature?
Well, as I mentioned, I will be introducing something regarding psychological evaluation, mm-hmm. but I also think we're going to try to have more of a discussion about what excessive use of force really means, how we train, how we in fact get people to work with one another in a different way, how we recruit. There are a number of ideas that we're going to be still working on, trying to put together before the September deadline of introducing bills.
All right. Lou Frederick is a state representative from Portland, from District 43. He will be part of this conversation on police accountability and force tomorrow night at 7 at the EWEB boardroom on 4th Avenue in Eugene. Representative Frederick, thank you for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you. Sorry, I have to go. Take care.
That's okay. You too. So let me round up the rest of the folks we have on here. Eric Richardson is the NAACP Lane County president. He'll be moderating tomorrow night. Arias Johnson Jr. is with the Oregon Department of Justice, where he's the civil rights director. Daryl Turner is with the Portland Police Association. He's the president. And Marianne Dugan is a civil rights attorney. Marianne, I want to come to you for the first time and give us an idea of what your involvement with this issue tends to be.
Thanks. So I do a lot of police misconduct litigation. I've been a lawyer for over 20 years, but for the past 15 years, I've done quite a bit of police excessive force and false arrest litigation. I was looking at my case list, and it looks like I've evaluated a police misconduct case on the average of one a week, but I've only taken on for further evaluation, maybe one every 2 months. And so when I say evaluate, you know, somebody calls me and says, is this something I can sue over? And after a pretty quick discussion, we decide that it's not something that's feasible. That's about once a week. About 5 or 6 times a year, I do jump in and evaluate more fully. And about a third of those I reject after reviewing them. So, you know, this is very hard to win these cases. You have to be very selective. I learned early on, you don't just jump in and take a case that sounds appealing, that you have sympathy for, because juries, for good reasons, trust police more than they trust lawyers and people who file lawsuits. So at this point, it seems to me that we really need more body cams, car cameras, citizen observers taking video. Those are the cases that actually are feasible to take on. Once there's a video, it's pretty clear usually what's happened. There may not be audio, but at least you can see what physically happened. When there's no video or an independent observer, it's almost impossible to win these cases. So I really hope that in the future there are more body cams, car cameras, and more documentation of that sort.
Marianne, I wonder if, given the heightened attention to police use of force over the last couple of years, if you're just getting more people who are asking if they have a case. There were more people showing up at your office suggesting they might have something.
I was checking that. I looked at kind of the stats from my cases or the calls I've received since 2013 or so, and it really has not changed. I think that the heightened focus on, shooting of unarmed, especially black, and especially men in the last couple years has certainly brought it more to the attention of the general public, and it has helped with jury selection, that people are more aware of the possibility that officers may misbehave, shall we say. But the number of people calling me actually has not changed.
All right, we have a comment here from Gene in Winston. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange. We're talking about the use of police and force, or police and the use of force.
Yes, well, it seems like in order to enhance this protect and serve consciousness of the police, maybe there could be some kind of campaign or contest or something where citizens will report cases where the police, a police person had really done something helpful or good, or, you know, where they had really helped the person. And then maybe certain policemen that got, you know, reports like that, maybe they would get some kind of commendation or medal or something, you know, to kind of emphasize the positive role of the police.
So reward the good behavior rather than well, or reward the good behavior, I guess, is that where you're talking about drawing the line here.
Would be thinking when, hopefully, when they had an encounter, that they would think, oh, well, you know, if I handle this really well, maybe I'll get some kind of little commendation or something.
Let's get some perspective on that when we come back from a break, because we have Daryl Turner from the Portland Police Association. We'll tee him up for that. We'll take a short break here on the Jefferson Exchange and resume the discussion. Garrison Keeley will be heard at the back of the hour. We'll come back and talk more about police and use of force with Eric Richardson, Arias Johnson Jr., Daryl Turner, and Marianne Dugan when we come back to the Jefferson Exchange in a minute 15. It's 8:36 on the Jefferson Exchange on the News and Information Service of Jefferson Public Radio. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. If you're just tuning in, we're continuing a discussion of police and the use of force. This is a preview of sorts of a community discussion planned for Eugene tomorrow night. It's called Police Accountability and Force. It will be at 7 o'clock tomorrow night at the eWeb Board Meeting Room, 500 East 4th Avenue in Eugene. Several of the people from that session join us here. Eric Richardson is the NAACP Lane County President. He'll be moderating. Arias Johnson Jr. was at the Oregon Department of Justice. He's the Civil Rights Director. Daryl Turner is the President of the Portland Police Association, the Police Officers Union in Portland. And Marianne Dugan is a Civil Rights Attorney. We'll take this for another 15 minutes or so. You can join us on the exchange at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. So back to the comments we got just before the break. Daryl Turner, Gene and Winston suggested recognition for officers who do things well. I mean, I'm going to modify the language a little bit. It's often been said many lines of work that one oh darn wipes out about 100 attaboys. I mean, do police get recognized enough for when things do go right, do you think?
And, well, I think it's more often that we don't look for accommodations. I think those are great ideas. I think the best feeling in the world for a police officer is when you're working in the area that you work, in that community that you work, and the people in that community know you, they know your name, they smile when they wave to you, they talk to you, they feel comfortable when they come and have conversations with you, and not just about problems in the neighborhood, just everyday conversations like you would have with any friend at a coffee shop or at lunch or in your travels as you deal with people. And I think that's the biggest attaboy for us as police officers are able to have. And I think the mentality of law enforcement is gone. I think, especially in the Portland Police Bureau, I've been here 25 years as a police officer, it's always been protect and serve. That is our job, to work with the communities that we work in, to get their input on what they need and their evolving and changing needs in those diverse communities that we do work. So we do get accommodations. We get people that call in and send letters in and good acts amongst police officers. But the biggest payback for us is just to be able to go in those communities and have the trust and have the relationships and garner those and covet those in the neighborhoods. When you go in and you can talk to a family and they recognize you and they know your name, it's the biggest attaboy you can ever get, because you know you've reached somebody that trusts you and has genuine trust in you and the job you do every day.
Does Portland have a particularly tricky relationship with its police force? When you were talking about, you know, visiting with people on the street, it reminded me of hearing a couple of years ago from the Oregonian that somebody at a coffee shop asked police officers to leave because other people felt uncomfortable around them, which I don't think I've ever heard of happening anyplace else.
You know, the political dynamics in Portland are challenging, to say the least. But I do think Portlanders overall do respect and trust the police officers that work in their communities. Nationwide, trust has been shaken from different events. I think, number one, I want to tell you, as a police union president, accountability is number one with us. Giving out information, accountability. When there's misconduct, we want to make sure that people are held accountable on both sides. When there's mistakes made, we want to make sure people are held accountable on both sides. But also, accountability goes both ways. And that needs to be shown when we talk about police acts. We have 800,000 law enforcement officers in this country. And when you see the CNN news cycle, or 24-hour news cycle on something that was either misconduct or a mistake by a police officer, that plays for days and days and days. Yet they don't play the millions of police contacts that go on in a week. And how positive they turn out and how well they turn out. And so people who have no police contact whatsoever see the negative, and, of course, that's what they attach to when you don't see the positive. I'm also the president of an organization called ORCOPS, which Lou Frederick talked about a little bit. We also had some input into the profiling bill that was successfully passed in two legislatures ago. We also have our labor attorney is on that work group that Mr. Johnson is on, in making sure that we hold police agencies accountable when, in the same realm, we want to make sure police officers are able to do their job in an effective way so that we're not depolicing, especially in communities of color and places like that where we need to be, and we need to be out there. We need to be on the streets and need to be talking to people in the community and what they need and what they want for their communities to look like.
Arias Johnson, let's talk about that work group a bit. And I'm curious to know what the process of work has been and if there have been some real eye-opening moments in the process of meeting and doing the work.
Like I said, we have a you have the task force, which is all the individuals that sit on it. Neil Correa, as Mr. Turner says, is on it, chief of police, sheriff's department. And what we're trying to do is be collaborative. We want law enforcement there. We want DOJ there. We also have Casey Jama from CIO, the Center of Intercultural Organizing, on it as well, because we're trying to find a collaboration between law enforcement, the state itself, and the community. And what's been coming out of it, there hasn't really been a lot of aha moments. I mean, there is an air or a feeling that, you know, this isn't the problem we think it is. But by the same token, having these listening sessions that Lou Frederick mentioned, you know, that profiling comes in many different forms. It's not always black males. You know, the transgendered community, which was surprising to me, gets profiled as prostitutes. There were a couple of transgender individuals who were approached by police officers who thought they were out soliciting sex. So that was something that kind of surprised me. You have a significant Muslim population here that's profiled by the same way black males are, you know, pulled over, seemingly questioned unnecessarily. So coming to Portland, me personally, seeing Oregon, the different type of diversity that exists here kind of surprised me. I think people need to understand that the culture does need to change, and also understanding it has to be more than training. It has to be more officers looking out for each other. It has to be a little more peer pressure. It has to be a little more understanding with the community, to have the community involved in how we are training police officers. That also surprised me, that there isn't more of a community involvement as far as helping officers understand who they're dealing with, having officers understand that it is a community, they're part of the community. Police officers are part of the community. And if you can understand an individual as your neighbor, you're less likely to look at them as a suspect. So I'm hoping that's what the training will do. The accountability model, I'm surprised that based on something here called home rule, which limits what the legislature can dictate to individual cities and counties, kind of surprised me. So it's a hindrance from trying to get state-level legislation down into the counties and trying to get uniformity. So the effort will be a little more daunting because it has to be come up with model policies, and then the next phase is trying to get the individual cities, counties, and municipalities to buy into those models and implement them themselves. You have some counties who just don't have funding to do the training, to take the, you know, the further steps of filling out information. Because on the data collection, I believe there was a proposal where police officers would have to start putting the data in themselves. When they stop an individual, why did they stop them? When did they stop them? Did they fall under one of the protected classes? And then you have some counties who just don't have the manpower to take, you know, a 2 or 3 minute stop and change it into a 10 or 15 minute stop because they're policing, you know, a huge county and have to get on to the next call. And then also it was brought to our attention that sometimes police officers are responding to a call. So though it may seem like profiling, it's like, no, they actually got a call from a citizen who put in a complaint about somebody. You know, that was a fact that I'd never considered, that a lot of the stops that occur are from citizen call-ins. So how do we account for that? You know, there may be profiling, but it gets shifted to a citizenry rather than the police. And a lot of people don't realize police are just responding to calls they get. So that also surprised me.
Eric Richardson, it sounds like you've got a decent relationship with Pete Kearns, the Eugene police chief, who will be part of the session tomorrow night. He was going to join us today, but had a change of plans. What would you say has been gained in the last couple of months or so, the last year or so, in trying to understand, both have the police understand the community better and have the community understand the police better?
Repeat your question.
The question was whether things have improved in Eugene. What kinds of things are still obstacles to better relations between police and the community?
Well, I believe that the issue with Sergeant Bass that took place really put a focus on the police, the community, mental health, their response, and all these issues that have been brought up by Mr. Johnson and Lou Fredericks. These issues have come to the forefront, so I think that we are all focused. There has been the Eugene Police Department did win a grant to outfit more of their people, I believe 23 officers with body cams. So these things are good, but they're also a sign that the culture, like we were talking about, needs to be looked at. Because documentation and whatnot, you're just documenting ill behavior. And so we need to get to a place where we're acknowledging the issues. And so, like Mr. Johnson said, within our communities, the issue of call-ins, the issue of race is an issue that we have to deal with as a society. And I think as we deal with this issue more intently, it will make its way into policy and into people's lives, because really this is what we're talking about. We're talking about individuals who need to embrace the change that's at hand.
Marianne Dugan, you brought up cameras earlier, too. I'm curious to know what kinds of responses you've got when you've requested the use of these cameras from police agencies.
Well, I mean, we are, you know, as attorneys, we come in after the fact. You know, there's not, I generally try not to take on a policy role, mainly because I have too many other things to do. So I support other groups that are.
So it's case by case, not a crusade. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think the one concern I've had is when I've heard about efforts to get body cameras is the officers want to be able to turn them on and off, and I think that would defeat the purpose because obviously. You know, if 90% of, or even 99% of the officers on the police force are honest and ethical and aren't going to want to beat somebody up and hide that fact, that 1%, if there is one, you know, one, then that officer would want to turn his body camera off, obviously. So I think there would have to be a system where it's not a choice to turn it on or off. And you know, there have been videos I've watched where I looked at it and I looked at the person who came to see me and I said, well, look what you did there. You know, of course you're going to get thrown to the ground, you know. So a lot of times cameras can help the officers. You know, you would think, I would think that I would want my actions to be filmed if I'm in that very vulnerable position of having people's well-being in my hands. You know, I would want somebody to be documenting that so that I can show that I didn't do anything wrong.
Daryl Turner, what's the status of camera installation at the Portland Police Bureau?
Well, right now it's on a hold pattern, but let me say this. I will tell you that I'm a strong advocate of body cams, dash cams, to a point. We have to make sure that the laws and the policies are equitable and fair. I hear people say they want the cameras on 100% at a time. When a police officer's on their shift, besides their police work, they do normal things like everybody else do. They go to the bathroom, they sit down and eat lunch, they make phone calls to their wives, husbands, spouses, significant others, and some of those conversations are private conversations. So just like we want to make sure we protect the privacy of citizens, we want to make sure we protect the privacy of police officers when they're doing the things that normal people would do every day. I think those are the things we have to make sure are important. We also have to make sure about HIPAA violations and not impose on people's HIPAA rights.
Which is healthcare.
We have those body. Well, healthcare. You go to a call and somebody's been assaulted or somebody's been hurt or injured or sick somehow, and when the EMTs or the fire people are asking them questions about their health history, if a body camera is right there, you're recording somebody's talking about their health history. It may be a case of somebody with a disease such as HIV or hepatitis C or whatever it may be. That's not something that really they want on camera, and it's their right not to have it on camera. So we have to understand there are certain precautions we need to take with body cams and dash cams. So when somebody says we want them on 100% of the time, that's not really feasible. Also, what they have to understand is the costs, the workload issues, those type of things of body cameras and storing the information and all those type of things. It's not always feasible to have them on. The battery life, there's a bunch of technical issues with having the body cameras on 100% of the time. And a lot of the smaller agencies won't be able to afford that if that is the case. So it's a cost analysis, but it's also a person analysis of you want to make sure you don't violate anybody's rights, and police officers the same. So we are wholeheartedly, I will tell you, I'm an advocate of them as long as the rules and the policies are reasonable and fair to everybody involved. Because, like I said, you wouldn't want a family member of yours being recorded when they're going through a mental health crisis and you end up seeing it on YouTube in 2 months because somebody somehow made a public records request and got it and put it out on YouTube or in a local newspaper or on a local news station.
We have an email here before we go from Joe and Talent. I'll summarize. It's the question we've heard asked many times about shoot to kill versus shoot to wound. Are there any situations, Daryl, in which police are instructed to shoot just to stop somebody rather than kill them?
I can only speak for the Portland Police Bureau, mm-hmm. not for any other agency, but I think nationwide, we are taught when you use deadly force to assess, make sure that you stop the threat. So, TV police is great when you can shoot a gun out of somebody's hand, but are you really that good when you're talking about a pressure situation, you have seconds to make a decision on using deadly force in this case to be able then to shoot somebody's gun out of their hand. You have so many parameters to think about. What is your backdrop? What's behind what you're shooting at? The threat of you being shot yourself. There are so many things that come into play. So our training is always to obviously stop the threat. And if that means we shoot at center masses, that's what we do.
All right. A lot of issues like this will come up tomorrow night, no doubt. The session is called Police Accountability and Force. It'll be at 7 o'clock tomorrow night at the Eugene Water and Electric Board E-Web Meeting Room, 500 East 4th Avenue in Eugene. Eric Richardson, the Lane County NAACP president, will be moderating. It'll also feature Pete Kearns from the Eugene Police, Arias Johnson Jr., Director of Civil Rights of the Oregon Department of Justice, who's been our guest here. We also have Mary Ann Dugan, a civil rights attorney, who'll be part of that panel as well. And we also want to thank Daryl Turner for joining us on this session from the Portland Police Association. Thank you all for joining us today on The Exchange.
Thank you.
All right.